McLaughlin, Mr. Morrison.
Good morning, Your Honors. This is a tax case that originated in the district court, and the issue in this case has to do with service of process. We asked the district court to dismiss the case for the lack of service of process. The case involves income taxes going back to 1983.
So how much in the aggregate was the service period extended as a result of these pratfalls by the government?
The defendant, Thomas McLaughlin, who's really the defendant in this case, was served on the 271st day.
271st day after the complaint was filed?
Yes. Yes.
And the ordinary period is
120.
So is 151 days late.
Right.
So how is he hurt by that?
Well, Your Honor, if you're asking is he prejudiced by it, we have, after this motion was ruled on, we filed an amended answer in which we basically admitted to the tax liability that he is liable for the tax liability.
Yeah, you couldn't claim prejudice. Because he had actual knowledge from the mailed service.
Yes, but the case.
And then from the hand-delivered service at his place of business. So he had actual knowledge well within the 120 days.
Yes, he did, Your Honor. But
why didn't he accept the invitation to waive service?
That's not disclosed in the record, Judge. I don't know why. I think that
why would anyone do that? Because don't you have to pay for service if.
That's my understanding of the rule. Yes, yes, you do. You can be made to.
Why would anyone do that except to stave off the evil day?
Right. Except to scoff law.
Well, I think that people, when they receive notices like that from the Internal Revenue Service, this is a scary thing, and maybe they don't know the appropriate way to handle it. And the cases say that you are now.
You don't know the way to handle it. The notice gives you perfect knowledge of the way to handle it.
Yes, but Judge, the cases say that notwithstanding those rules, you are entitled to be served with process.
There's
your client was served with process.
Yes, Judge.
Got his rights in full.
But he was served with process after. I mean, what happened here was. The government waited until there were 5 days left to go on a 10-year statute of limitations before they filed a complaint.
And he made up his mind to get out of town and everybody with him.
I don't think that's a fair characterization of what happened, Judge. They had a change of government lawyers, so the case was filed, and a number of weeks, 6 to 10 weeks, depending on which defendant you look at, passed by before.
No, we're talking about him. Why he wasn't available to be served.
Well, Judge, he was. What happened was that they used an internal revenue officer to go out and serve process. That occurred on the 113th day of the 120-day period. The revenue officer was called.
It's all in the record. What do we know?
Yes. So she goes there and she sees that the windows are open and she's got both written and oral instructions as to how she's supposed to serve process. She doesn't do it that way. She serves
well,
process.
Well, what did the person say that was finally found? His daughter.
I'm sorry, Judge.
What did she say?
There's no evidence in the record as to what she said. They went to her place of business.
Right.
Donna McLaughlin is the daughter and sister.
Right.
The revenue officer gave the papers to Donna McLaughlin, asked her where does your father and where does your sister live. She already knew where they lived because she had been there, you know, that very day. She called up the government lawyer and said that I affected service of process. What was said in that conversation, we don't know.
What did the daughter do with the?
That's not in the record either, Judge. I don't know.
To her father.
Well, I think you might infer that, Judge. But then what happened here is where I think the wheels come off the government's case, because the next day, still within the 120-day service period, there's been a conversation, and they submit to the government lawyer this return of service form, which which the government lawyer says she looked at but didn't read it carefully. But if you look at this, you couldn't look at this for a second without noticing that the box other form of service was checked. So I think that, and there were two of these documents, where the top of it, which is the normal thing that you would expect, has not been checked. And she's also given a written report from the revenue officer.
Why should your client get away with wrongful conduct? Because the government screwed up.
Because that's what the rules dictate, Judge.
A mindless rule, in other words. No reason, just a stupid, another stupid rule is what you're saying.
Well, you know, the rules are the
mechanism. That's what you're saying. Rules are what they are. They're dumb. We obey them.
Right, but unfortunately for you, the rule allows the district court to increase the time.
Right, but what happened,
of course, someone says, there's the rule. The rule is, this is allowed, it was done, and here we are.
But I don't think you can ignore the background that surrounds that, which is that the government had in its files at least three documents.
What? Presumably the purpose of the rule is to protect people against prejudice, and there can be prejudice if you're not served half a year later. But when there isn't, then why isn't it make perfectly good sense for the judge to say, well, right, the government screwed up, it didn't cause any harm, so we're not going to let you get away with your wrongful behavior just because the government was negligent.
But it's a laxity that the government showed.
So what? So they're lax. You weren't hurt by it. So.
And
you're hurt as a taxpayer,
Judge,
if you do pay your taxes ever. I mean, your client.
Right. But the difference there are a number of things.
So
first of all,
a peculiarly pointless kind of exclusionary rule, where somehow because of negligence in service, someone gets this tremendous windfall, admitted liability canceled because the government is clumsy. What?
But it's
want to do something like that?
But Judge, I would say that it's more than that. They went in after the period had expired is when they noticed it. They went in and they asked the judge to give them an extension for good cause. They never asked for a discretionary extension. They asked for an extension for good cause, and the good cause that they claimed was going on here was that the defendant was evading service. And the basis for that, and that's all they asked for. The rule does provide for a discretionary extension. They never asked for it. They never asked for it in any of the three extensions they got, nor did they even ask for it when we filed our motion to dismiss.
Well, your client probably was evading service.
Well, Judge, the district judge in ruling on our
motion. Told his daughter, if they try to give you a piece of paper, you put it in the shredder immediately.
Well, Judge, the district judge in ruling on our motion to dismiss because of the faulty service found, after the fact that there was not good cause, that one attempt to go out and serve the person during the 120-day period cannot constitute good cause. So there was no good cause ultimately found by the district court, and the government never asked for a discretionary extension.
And you don't think that the judge had the authority to grant discretion?
Well, Judge, I couldn't find case law on it. One of the cases that we cited in our brief is a Thompson case.
You don't think he has the inherent power to do that?
Well, I don't know, Judge. The Thompson case basically said that the district court didn't have to give it because the person never asked for it.
He didn't have to, but he had the inherent power to do it. It's a discretionary power.
Yes, Judge, it is a discretionary power, but the discretion has to have some basis in it, as we argued in our brief for
the
reasons.
The basis is that there's no prejudice.
Well, there has to be more than that, Judge.
Why does there have to be more? Why
because
isn't that
case law, the case law says that the prejudice to the defendant alone is not enough to allow the extension.
It's not enough to compel the judge to give the to exercise lenity. Well, I don't see why it isn't enough to justify his doing it.
Well, I'll give you that it's a factor to consider, but as our...
Why isn't it sufficient? No harm, so we don't want this person to get away with tax evasion or whatever he's doing. So why isn't that a perfectly good exercise of discretion?
Because I don't think that it takes into account the other facts.
No, it does. It says, look, government behaved disgracefully, they're incompetent, they should be fired. But nevertheless, since there was no prejudice to the defendant, he admits this tax liability. We're not going to let him have this tremendous windfall just to punish the government.
But it awards the windfall to the government, Judge.
No, it's not a windfall. You owe the tax. Your client owes the taxes.
Owes the money.
That's not a windfall. They're just getting what they're entitled to by law.
The statute of limitations.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Morrison. Ms. Barthel?
May it please the court. The Rule 4M does, in fact, grant the court the inherent authority to extend the time quite apart from whatever the government asked for in its motion. The rule expressly states that the court, upon motion or on its own initiative, shall dismiss the action or direct that service be effected within a specified time and so forth. If the court could act on its own initiative even without a motion, certainly whatever the government said in its motion does not dictate the court's exercise of its discretion. We note, as the court remarked, that Thompson versus Brown says that the court is not required to exercise its discretion, but it certainly doesn't say that the court may not exercise its discretion. In Panaris, this court suggested that if the court does not find good cause, then it must exercise its discretion or seek to see if there is a discretionary basis for extending the time for service in such circumststances. In this case, the motion to reopen, the government sought an extension under Rule 4M generally. It didn't say one or the other in the motion itself. In the memorandum supporting the motion, the government noted that the court could exercise its discretion in the absence of good cause, but then argued that the following factors constituted good cause. In the minute order granting the motion, the court simply said, we grant the government's motion under Rule 4M, which is what it said in the following minute orders granting the government's subsequent motions for extensions, all of which were filed within the extended period, all of which showed that, in fact, it really did appear as if Mr. McLaughlin were evading service, that the professional process servers also had ill luck in getting hold of him. The district court properly, under the facts of this case, exercised its discretion to reopen and extend. The court has said, Coleman and in Troxell, that if a district court properly sets out the relevant law and makes no factual findings that are clearly erroneous, an abuse of discretion exists only if the decision was arbitrary or unreasonable or completely off base. And the decision was hardly off base in this case. The government showed that it had been diligent. It had attempted to make service during the period. All other defendants in the case were served, except for the two McLaughlins. Attorney Seaman knew that Mr. McLaughlin had received service and had taken action about it, since she heard from his lawyer on the subject. And when she did not obtain waiver of service, she did make arrangements to effect personal service and gave very explicit directions to the revenue officer who was directed, and had no reason to expect, although she probably should have checked, to see that it had been executed properly. When she discovered that it had not, she immediately moved to reopen and extend the service period, which the court granted, and then hired...
Of course, the error here was a real technicality. Is there any background behind the rule that service of process may be left with an adult at the defendant's home but not at the defendant's place of business?
That is the letter of the law.
No, I understand that. My question is there any background behind it? Is that just the way it was done in Norman, France, and we've had it ever since?
I'm afraid I really don't know the history of
Well, maybe a place of business. Yeah, there could be 10,000 other people there.
That's possible, although in this case it was a family business, so
of course, I understand.
A father and a couple of daughters. The government subsequently hired professional process servers. The first one, it was a process server who had been used by the U.S. attorney, therefore presumably an efficient and effective process server.
But why are you going through all this? Isn't your point that the judge has discretion to forgive when there's absolutely no prejudice?
The judge does have discretion to forgive when there's no prejudice, and as the court has remarked, there's no prejudice in this case. Defendant knew the contents of the complaint within the 120-day period. He'd seen it at least once, probably twice. He admitted the culpability. There is no prejudice to his attempt to defend the case.
Okay. Well, thank you, Ms. Barthel.
Thank the court.
Morrison, your time expired. If you want another minute, you can have it or not. Okay. Well, thank you very much for your argument.